Amen. We can just go home now. We've done this thing. So I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is such my pleasure and delight to serve this amazing congregation. The music rocks. There is so much color and Easter festivity among you. You are a pleasure to look upon. And I just want you to know every single person here is welcome. You're welcome if this is your very first day, if you've been coming for 50 years. You're welcome if you absolutely love Easter, or it makes you anxious, or you really just don't care. You're welcome whether for you Easter is all about eggs and bunnies and baby goats, or if it's about the holiness in the world that blooms again and again. Or if you, for you, Easter is about the death and resurrection of Jesus. Whoever you are, and however you are feeling today, you are welcome here. And I have great news. After service, instead of our usual egg hunt, we are having a petting zoo where there's going to be actual goats and actual bunnies and lots of fun activities for people of all ages. So do show up for that. There's also coffee, and I saw a rather amazing array of treats downstairs. So celebrate Easter with us. I would love to have Karen come up, and she's going to share about our stewardship campaign.
All right. Well, happy Easter from me, too. I'm Karen Stratton, and I had the pleasure, and it really was a pleasure, of organizing the stewardship campaign this year. And it was over officially 2 weeks ago, and we still have about half a dozen people or so who haven't pledged. So if that's you, you can see me afterwards, go to the office, see Jen. But the good news is that we have gathered pledges in the amount of $208,000, $869.20. So that was really great. Very happy. We thank you all for your generosity, and it's going to help WOOF to reach some of the goals that we've been talking about through our visioning process this year. And I want to extend a special thanks to many, many people who helped on the campaign. First, I want to recognize Dan Boyce, who's in the choir. Stand up. I asked him a few months ago, you know, when I took this on, if he would be willing to work with me, and he immediately said yes, and I was so grateful, and it was great working with him. Thank you, Dan. I also want to recognize that very early on, and you can hold your applause till the end, that's okay, because there's like dozens of people. Howard Baldwin in the back, John Riles, our board president, and Gary Joquin, also in the congregation today, volunteered their help and advice as members of last year's stewardship team, and I really appreciated that support. I had an idea originally to create some kind of a thermometer to visually keep track of the pledges as they came in, and I thought to myself, who is creative and artistic in the congregation? Came up with Eleanor Claggett, who I see back there, and she created that beautiful flower poster that was downstairs in the coffee room. Her children helped to color the roots and the dirt. River Forbes and Alana Bellwood, who are in the congregation as well, painted the leaves and the flower. And then Deborah Elkinton, right there, helped me with the numbers and actually putting it on the wall so it would stay. And it did. And so that poster is so big, we rolled it up and we stored it up high in the acorn room so we can hopefully use it again next year. So you might remember that in late February, we had a kickoff to our campaign. Dan and I joined with the visioning team to offer lunch to everybody and an opportunity to meet with other people and talk about the five areas of interest that were uncovered during the visioning process. And I really appreciated the visioning team's willingness to facilitate those groups and take notes. And so I thank Sulima Malzin, who I see here, Kim Transier in the choir, Amy Lodato in the choir, Evan Axe somewhere, Gary and Elisa Joquin in the congregation, Wendy Kluse, John Riles, and Uwe Neitzel, who I don't think Uwe and Trish are here today, but he just retired Friday. And I also want to thank Virginia for volunteering to set up the tables and to Heidi Haidloff, especially because she ended up having to stay long to wash dishes when she thought she was just doing coffee hour. So that was rough. But it was a great event. We had five people who did what I'm doing right now, gave little stewardship moments during the last month and a half. And I appreciate Dan Boyce again, Virginia Quimby, Uwe Neitzel, Ashley Ulmer. I think I saw Ashley. And Rosie Hamilton. Thank you very much. And during the process of the campaign, Dan, Uwe, and then Jen Fife Adams, especially our administrator, met with me repeatedly to discuss progress strategy and spreadsheets, and so I thank you very much. And to Mary Usui, who kept up the spreadsheet while Jen was gone. So after the official campaign ended, several people followed up with phone calls, texts, and emails. So I want to thank Christine Leffler in the choir, Rosie Hamilton, Uwe, Dan Boyce, and John Riles. And so I tried to keep careful notes of everybody who helped, and you can see there were a lot of people. If I missed you, I apologize sincerely. I did not mean to miss you. If you let me know, I'll put it in the bulletin board that you helped too. So thank you very much. Now you can clap for everybody.
Why I'm so happy to serve this congregation. So much engagement and involvement. And we had some people who were trying to come in. So if you wanted to, like, if you have empty seats, scoot in or wave a hand. Is there people still out, Annie, who want to come in?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's too bad. So this is a moment for you all to wish each other a happy Easter. But one thing, if you are a little person who needs your hands to move during the service, because it's going to be a little bit, there are toys out in the foyer and coloring sheets. So during greeting each other, run out and get yourself something. And if you're an adult who needs something to fidget with, you also are welcome. All right? So wish each other a happy Easter. Invite Gil forward to light the chalice. Gil? Quiet. You can talk during coffee hour, everybody. Okay, Gil is lighting our chalice this morning. Fire represents the power of transformation. May the transforming power of the world help transform all of us into more joy-filled, loving people.
Good morning, everybody.
Okay, say our words, you guys. Let us open our eyes.
Blessed to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our eyes to see what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors. My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him. And it's so good to see everybody today on this sort of high day here at WOOF. I'd like to offer some opening words this morning by Victoria Stafford. It is entitled, Did the Sun Come Up Again? The dead shall rise again. Have you seen the trees? Have you seen the maple buds? The magnolias swelling? Poplars? the first lacy pale across the shoulder of the hills. The Frescentia, or as one child I know calls it, three Cynthia. And two Cynthia. And all those three small flowering perfect crabapple trees in the park. Strong little trees begging children to climb them and get lost for a while in their magical pink canopies. Did you smell the rain this week and the muddy, ready earth receiving it? Did you smell the musty, lusty, moldy pile of leaves all thawed now? And underneath the moist, living earthworms, wide awake. It is safe, I wonder, to presume that we have all seen the dead resurrected. Can we presume, just quietly among us, this basic fact? Can we admit, however carefully at first, however foolish it may sound, that once or twice in our lives, or perhaps over and over and tumbling over, we have seen events miraculous? Choose the words you will, whatever words you need. If miracle cloys, try unexpected, surprising, unanticipated, lucky. That which has been given us, that second chance, that second wind, by the grace of God knows what. We don't know, and never will, where the leaf's strength comes from in the spring. We don't know, and never will, entirely, where our own strength comes from. But we have known despair. Some of us, and deep discouragement, some of us, and discord of mind and heart, or disasters in the body or the spirit, or both. We've known dead hope, dead courage, dead caring, dead will, dead faith, dead vision, dead power, deep winter, and we have felt, perhaps when we least expected to feel anything at all, our own slow blood stir in the vein like maple sap, and something very small and tight will begin to well up and open up, urgent, imperceptible at first, then undeniable. Love lives again, that with the dead has been. Did the sun come up this morning? No thanks to us, and all for us. And did the earth awake again, or did it not? We will testify to resurrection. Please stand as you are willing or able, and we'll sing number 61, "The Earth, Let the Earth Walk Again."
Oh.
theme this month is transformation. And Easter is the joyful celebration of transformations. The simplest transformations happen when we just change perspective, when we understand something differently than we understood it before. So we're going to do a little exercises that demonstrates changing perspective. So this is what I want everybody to do. I want you to point your finger straight at the ceiling and look at the ceiling, all right? And then you're going to move your finger clockwise. And if you're not a person who knows clockwise yet, what you're going to do is I'm facing you, and you're going to move in the direction towards that wall. And you're going to trace a clock in the ceiling. And then you're going to move your hand down in front of your face. And what happened to your finger? It's going the other direction. It's a new perspective, right? It's going clockwise now, right? Counterclockwise right now. So try it again. Clockwise. And move your finger down. And it's counterclockwise. And that is changing perspective. We can all do it anytime. Isn't that cool? So, I have a story to tell you. Once upon a time, Satan, who is the great distractor, he's the twister of truth. And my thing is not doing this right for me. And so, according to a tale by Hans Christian Andersen, the Satan once made this window. I've got to go down. Sorry, guys. We're getting used to these new mics. All right. Made this wasn't a beautiful window. He made a big window. And if people looked through it, all they could see was everything bad. All they could see was meanness. They could only see their own mistakes and things they did they didn't like. They could only see things that other people did that they didn't like. They took offense at anything anybody said. They expected the worst. When they looked outside, all they saw was grass and weeds and garbage. They never could see anything else. And Satan loved this window. It was so fun. He made people come over and look through it and just see all the awful things in the world. War, famine, ugliness. And so he decided that they should take it up to God and the angels, because he was just tired of them only seeing love and joy and all that nonsense. So he got his demons together, and the demons began to carry this big glass window up to where God and the angels were. But they had never cooperated on anything in their lives. And it was a pretty big window. So they started, you know, grabbing it and yelling at each other. And, well, they dropped it. And it fell on the ground. And it broke into little tiny bits. And these little tiny bits were very tricky, like Satan. And they went and they got into people's eyes. And people didn't really feel them, but they started to see everything as bad. They started arguing with people. They took horrible offense at people. They thought the only way to deal with a conflict was to yell and hit and kill. And it got really ugly. And God didn't like this at all. She was actually pretty mad about it. And so she instructed her angels to make another window, one that when you looked through it, you saw goodness and you saw beauty. And you saw love and kindness. And then the angels went and they dropped it on purpose onto the earth, where it broke into little tiny bits. But the thing about these particular bits is that you have to look for them. They're not tricky like Satan's. You have to look for them. You have to choose to use them. And so today, we are going to learn how to look for them and choose them. So I have actually a whole bunch of bits from the falling window. And so we're going to pass these around. I think there was a couple of young people who had agreed to help with this project. And Scott's going to get you started while we go on to the next thing. So everybody take a bit of this beautiful... this beautiful glass.
Which window
This is the beauty window. That's not what God calls it, which I can't remember. Oh, they called it goodness. They called it goodness. So this is the goodness window. You're each getting a bit of it. So if you're at home, I also want you to get a bit of glass. And you can look around your house. You probably have something. Maybe a stone or a button or a glass from the cupboard or a piece of jewelry. Really, anything can be used. So now we're going to, as we pass these out, and you can pass those up and down the aisle so people can get them. We are going to start our first story, which is called I Eat Poop by Matt Pett. I Eat Poop, a dung beetle story. I'm so sorry, choristers. You might just want to look around the best you can. It's pretty good. Tuesday began like most days. I sat down for breakfast with my parents. As usual, my baby brother was making a mess. I helped my mom make my favorite lunch, a poop sandwich with the crust cut off, and I packed my backpack for school. At school, as I do every day, I hid my lunch under a big pebble behind the monkey bars where no one would see it. It's hard being the only dung beetle in the entire school. I can't eat lunch with the other kids. I have to sneak snacks at recess. I have to tell everyone I'm just a regular old ground beetle. It's a lot of work keeping my secret, but I just don't have a choice. Look how they treat Sammy's stink bug. If you can't see the picture, they are yelling and they are being very mean, bullying him. If everyone found out I eat poop, I would be an outcast. Dad says I come from a long line of proud dung beetles. He says we help process waste and make the earth more inhabitable. All I know is I go through more mouthwash than any kid should. Don't get me wrong, I love poop. As Dad says, it's my genes. But I wish I was a wasp, or better yet, a dragonfly. They are by far the most popular bugs in the school. That's why what happened in Mr. Longlegs' class was so crazy. One of the popular bugs dropped a stack of books to surprise Ronald Roly-Poly. Ronald snapped into a ball. He rolled down the aisle right toward me. Without thinking, I jumped on top. I started steering him with my legs, and I carefully brought him to a stop. As I hopped down, the whole class cheered. "You should sit with us at lunch," said Wesley Wasp. I couldn't believe it. For the first time in my life, I was going to sit with the popular kids. When I got to the lunchroom, I didn't even care that I couldn't eat in front of the other bugs. I walked past Herman Housefly. As usual, he was sitting alone. Herman is the only one in the school who knows my secret. We used to play together, and we loved the same snacks. For a while, we were best friends. As I passed him, Herman said, "Hey, Dougie, want to join me? I've got a poopsicle with your name on it." "Herman, how can you eat that in front of the other bugs?" I asked. "They'll torture me for it." "Well," Herman said, "if I let those pests run my life, I would never be happy." I joined the popular bugs at their table and pretended I wasn't hungry. By afternoon recess, my abdomen was really growling. I snuck away to find my lunch sack under the big pebble behind the monkey bars. As I opened the snack, I heard a voice. "What's that?" said Nick Nat, the peskiest bug in school. I don't know, I lied. I just found it under this pebble. The popular bugs growled around. "Open it," said Derek Dragonfly. "Yeah, let's see what's in it," said Wesley Wasp. My antenna went numb as I pulled out my lunch, item by item. "Hey, gross," said Nick. "It's a poop sandwich." "And poop pudding," said Derek. "And a box of poop juice," added Wesley. "This is disgusting," said Nick. "Who do you think it belongs to?" "Probably that housefly," said Wesley. "He's the only one in the school who eats poop." "There he is," said Derek.
You should go dump it on his head, said Wesley. Bugs from across the playground started swarming around us. As they urged me on, I crept up beside Herman. I felt a pounding in my thorax. I was about to humiliate my old friend. I stopped and turned around. I can't, I said. It's my lunch. The crowd gasped. Yours, said Wesley. You like poop? I do, I admitted. I love it. It's the first thing I want to eat in the morning and the last thing I want to eat at night. It's my favorite thing in the whole wide world. And then I did something I never thought I would do. I took a bite of my sandwich in front of everyone.
Look at him, shrieked Nick. He loves it. That's gross, said Derek.
But I was shocked by what happened next. A second grader praying mantis spoke up. So, my mom ate my dad. Everyone looked at each other. I have ears in my armpit, said Manuel Moth. I eat dead people, said Maud Maggot. I throw up when people touch me, said Gareth Grasshopper. I was born pregnant, said Alphonse Aphid. I breathe out my butt, said Tammy Tick. It turned out the whole school was crawling with weirdos. Even the popular bugs turned out to be weird. I breathe through my tummy. I have five eyeballs. I like the taste of food with my feet. The next morning, I went to school carrying my Captain Dung Beetle lunchbox. And I've eaten in the lunchroom with my friends ever since. So this is a story about changing perspective. Our hero changed his perspective of himself. He was scared of being bullied for who he was, and in an instant, he decided that more than being a person who wanted to be accepted by the crowd, he wanted to be a friend. Telling the whole school that that lunch was his was an incredibly courageous and vulnerable moment, and he had no idea what would happen. His great fear was that he would be forever bullied when he just wanted to be liked and accepted, like most of us. In this story, however, he ended up with even more friends. But it easily could not have turned out that way. In real life, sometimes it doesn't turn out that way. But instead, what happened was his courage allowed others to show the secrets that they were keeping. And school became a much kinder place. So I want everybody to just take a moment and think of a time that you were your best self. Maybe it was a time that you were kind to someone, or maybe it was a time you were generous with your time or your help or your money, or you were just really helpful. Maybe it was a time you did something really difficult, even when it took great effort or courage. Maybe like getting back on a bike after you fell off, or calling a friend after you had a fight, and apologizing. Apologizing can often be hard. Or doing something you never tried before and you were afraid you'd look bad. Or just telling the truth about who you are courageously, like Doug the Dung Beetle did. Maybe you did really well on a project or assignment that mattered to you. Whatever it was, I just want you to take some time and remember it. We're just going to take a few moments of silence. I want you just to remember it. Remember what happened. Remember some of the details. Remember how it felt. Maybe you felt good or proud or loving or happy or relieved or joyful. Now, I just want to invite you to take your piece of goodness glass and hold it and let your memory sink into that bit of glass. Just let it flow into it. So it's holding it for you. And now whenever you hold this piece, I want you to be able to access this memory and remember that moment in your life. And you can remember that that best self, that part of who you are, is part of who you are, always. And you can always access it and know that you are a very capable person with a good heart.
Alberto Rios, former poet laureate of Arizona, has said, "We give because somebody gave to us. We give because nobody gave to us. We give because giving has changed us and made us more generous. We give because giving could have changed us." How has practicing generosity helped you notice the generosity of other people? How has practicing generosity helped your heart to grow deeper and more expanded? For myself, I've found that being generous helps to bring a deeper experience of being alive and more engaged in the world. Moving beyond my own thoughts and my own feelings and my own desires, giving generously has helped me to love more fully in all the areas of my life. And as our offering is taken this morning, we invite you to express your generosity as you feel inspired. The gift of your time, your energy, your talents, and financial contributions are so appreciated as we build this beloved community together. We will now receive the offering, and our host can come forward. Thank you so much for your generosity today and for your gifts. Will you please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving? Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Another story for you. called The Last Stop on Market Street by Matt DiLapina. Theoretically. Oh, I have to turn it on. It's one of those things. All right. CJ pushed through the church doors, skipped down the steps. The air outside smelled like freedom, but it also smelled like rain, which freckled CJ's shirt and dripped down his nose. He ducked under his Nana's umbrella, saying, "How come we gotta wait for the bus in all this wet?" "Trees get thirsty too," his Nana told him. "Don't you see that big one drinking through a straw?" CJ looked a long time, but he never saw a straw. From the bus stop, he watched water pool on flower petals, watched the rain patter against the windshield of a nearby car. His friend Colby climbed in, gave CJ a wave, and drove off with his dad. "Nana, how come we don't have a car?" "Boy, what do we need a car for? We got a bus that breathes fire and old Mr. Dennis who always has a trick for you." The bus creaked to a stop in front of them. It sighed and sagged, and the door swung open. "What's that I see?" Mr. Dennis asked. He pulled a coin from beside CJ's ear and placed it in his palm. Nana laughed her deep laugh and pushed CJ along. They sat right up front. The man across the way was tuning his guitar. An old woman with curlers had butterflies in a jar. Nana gave everyone a great big smile and said, "Good afternoon." She made sure CJ did the same. The bus lurched forward, stopped, lurched, and stopped. Nana hummed. "How come we always gotta go here after church?" CJ said. "Magoo and Colby never have to go nowhere." "I feel sorry for those boys," she told him. "They never get a chance to beat Mobo or the Sunglass Man. And I hear Trixie got herself a brand new hat." CJ stared out the window, feeling sorry for himself. A man climbed aboard with a spotted dog. CJ gave up his seat. "How come that man can't see?" "Boy, what do you know about seeing?" Nana told him. "Some people watch the world with their ears." "That's a fact. Their noses too," the man said, sniffing at the air. "That's a mighty fine perfume you're wearing today, ma'am." Nana squeezed the man's hand and laughed her deep laugh. Two older boys got on next. CJ watched as they moved by and stood in back. "Sure wish I had one of those," he said. Nana set down her knitting. "What for? You've got the real live thing sitting across from you. Why don't you ask the man if he'll play us a song?" CJ didn't have to. The guitar player was already plucking his strings and beginning to sing. And in the darkness, the rhythm lifted CJ out of the bus, out of the busy city. He saw sunset colors swirling over crashing waves, saw a family of hawks flying through the sky, saw butterflies, saw the old woman butterflies dancing free in the light of the moon. The song ended, and CJ opened his eyes. Everyone on the bus clapped, even the boys in the back. Nana glanced at the coin in CJ's palm. CJ dropped it in the man's hat. "Last stop on Market Street," Mr. Dennis called. CJ looked around as he stepped off the bus. Crumbling sidewalks and broken down doors, graffiti-tagged windows and boarded up stores. He reached for his Nana's hand. Oh, there's where they are. He reached for his Nana's hand. "How come it's always so dirty over here?" She smiled and pointed to the sky. "Sometimes you're surrounded by dirt, CJ. You're better able to witness what's beautiful." CJ saw the perfect rainbows arcing over their soup kitchen. He wondered how his Nana always found beautiful, where he never even thought to look. He looked around all of them again at the bus rounding the corner out of sight and the broken street lamp still lit up bright and a stray cat's stretched shadows moving across the wall. When he spotted their familiar faces in the window, he said, "I'm glad we came." He thought his Nana might laugh her deep laugh, but she didn't. She patted him on the head and told him, "Me too, CJ. Now come on." And if you can't see, they're serving soup at the soup kitchen. All right, that's the end of that story. And so I just want you to think about a place. Because one of the things that's really I love about this story is CJ's grandmother has a lot, has definitely has a goodness glass in her eye. And she is training CJ to have one in his eyes as well. She helps him see beauty and wonder on the bus, in other people, in the rundown neighborhood, at the soup kitchen, where they serve those who even have less than CJ and his grandmother, who obviously don't have a lot. So I want you to take a moment now and think about some place that you go in your life. Maybe you go to school, or a playground, or this congregation, the store, or a job, a class that you take, or maybe a pool you swim in. So I just want you to take a moment. You can close your eyes if you want to, and picture that place, and picture the people that you see regularly. Now notice in your memory the things that are beautiful in this place, or wondrous, or lift your spirit, the goodness, and in the people and in the surroundings. What brings them alive, those people? What makes them, what are their gifts? Maybe you know that, and maybe you don't know that. But just notice if you do or you don't. So I want you to take that piece of goodness glass. And that glass helps us see the beauty and gifts of those around us. Let the goodness you've seen in the place in your imagination flow into the stone. Put also your intention to notice more next time you are in that place with those people, to notice the beauty and the gifts. We'll take a moment of quiet.
Remembering all those people in our lives, I invite you now to explore your heart, to explore in your heart what it's holding today. I know that each of us has things in our lives that we are grateful for, things that bring us happiness and where we feel loved and where we feel connected in the world. And there's also those parts of our hearts that are grieving, those parts of our hearts that are feeling sad, that are challenged in ways that we weren't expecting, challenged in ways that bring us pain and suffering. This is our ritual of joys and sorrows, and it's here to remind everybody that we are a circle of care, that whatever your heart is feeling, whatever you're experiencing today, that this community cares for you, and that this is a tangible way that you can express what you're feeling. So as Ben plays, I invite you to come forward as you feel moved and place a stone in the water to express a little bit about what you're feeling today. And I'll have a microphone here for those who'd like to briefly share a little bit what's happening for them.
I'm extremely grateful and enriched this morning because I have benefited from the generosity of one of my family members here at Wolf. I had some plumbing needs, and this amazing brother, Wolf brother, came and spent hours in my house yesterday and fixed it. We're not a community, we're a family.
Metal
medical community and for this community. I have a new knee, and this community supported me and cared for me in more ways than one.
This is a celebration of Trans Day of Visibility for all our trans people out there, our family. We see you. I see you. This is for my son, Mike, who would have been 63 years old today.
This is for my daughter Penny, who's celebrating with us, but they're downstairs, and I just realized that they are here.
I had the opportunity to celebrate with one of our members who just turned 100, Alexa Chivik's partner, Irv.
This is for our daughter Lottie, who turned 5 last week, and we got to celebrate her with a birthday party here at the playground. It was really nice to introduce her, all of her friends, to the wonderful area that you have here.
I will place one final stone into the water that represents all that is left unsaid on our hearts today that we continue to hold.
For the longest time at Easter, I celebrated spring. In the UU church I first attended, we had flower communion every Easter, and I loved that with all my heart. I just thought it was perfect. Then when I actually became a minister, I created Easter services that focused on how our lives renew after dormancy and suffering, because this is the nature of life itself, and we can see it and experience it. I am a religious naturalist, so those metaphors have supported my life as I noticed how the human lives cycle through periods of struggle, waiting, pain, becoming, joy, pleasure, happiness. Nothing stays the same. Everything changes. We transform. And that gives me hope. However, over the years, I have come to love the story of Jesus and his death and resurrection as well. We can count on spring, but when we are in the midst of our own struggles, it can feel as if spring may never come. There is no month or day when we know for sure that our grief will lessen, our body will stop hurting, or our circumstances will change. It can be hard to hope, or to even know what to hope for. We are unlike the daffodil, who blooms predictably when there is enough light and heat. The Easter story about Jesus, I think, offers a more human metaphor for transformation. In this story, after Jesus dies, his body is placed in a cave. Several grieving women go to the cave to prepare him for burial. However, when they get there, the stone that was in front of the cave has been rolled back, and there's an angel sitting there, and Jesus is gone. The angel tells the women that Jesus has risen. When the women go back and tell everybody else, of course, no one believes them because that's crazy. But then later, his disciples do see the living Jesus, which is a shock. I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and I do not believe that Jesus physically came back from the dead. I do believe, however, that the unexpected empty cave is a remarkable metaphor for the possibilities of our own lives. The people who loved and followed Jesus believed everything was over when he was dead. They were grieving and devastated. But their experience got completely twisted around. Shockingly, he was still with them. He was not really gone. I believe that they discovered that his spirit still guided them and that his followers found that they could be Jesus' body and continue to live and share his teachings and message that had become so important to them. Christian communities often still refer to themselves as the body of Christ. His followers changed their perspective from one of needing the person Jesus to lead them in this new way of being human together, one where they respected and cared for others and felt the possibility of the divine within each of them, to one where they could do that together. This story is about an unexpected change of perspective, an unexpected transformation, which is often how it happens for us. And this, I believe, is a deep basis for human hope. It says we cannot know what will happen, even when our expectations appear pretty reasonable, like Jesus is dead or is going to stay dead, or our company is downsizing and our job is on the line, or we don't seem to have any friends, or school or work is really hard and we don't know how we're going to get through. Authoritarianism and hate is growing. Climate chaos is hurting life. Our fear, our pain, and apathy can narrow our perceptions and thus our capacity to notice what is right there offering us possibilities. Like when Jesus died, everybody and people said he'd come back, everybody's like, yeah, no, that didn't happen. And that's what we often do as well when the possibilities present themselves. Doug, the dung beetle, didn't see the weirdness of the other bugs because he was too busy feeling ashamed about who he was. CJ couldn't see the goodness around him because he was noticing everything he did not have. But if we do notice and let unexpected possibilities shake up our perception, we can find paths out of the hard places in our lives and in our communities. We have to pay attention, though, and we have to look through the goodness glass rather than the Satan's glass. So as you hold this piece of goodness glass again, I offer this blessing to go with it. May this lens remind us to see our own goodness and other people's goodness. May this lens help us see kindness, moments of affection, people supporting one another, laughter and smiles. May it remind us to bask in the blooming trees and days of long light. May it inspire us to be open to the unexpected and all possibilities. May it help us create more beauty, love, and goodness and joy with our lives. Maybe this week, experiment with this lens as you move through your days and see what happens. See if there's a shift in perspective. When Jesus rose, he gave his followers new life and new paths after experiencing complete devastation. And that really is what transformation is. We find ourselves on a new path. Often we simply discover it and learn to find goodness in this new way we are on. Recognizing our capabilities, other people's gifts, and the beauty around us helps us so we can rise from despair, rise from fear, from grief, from pain, and bloom into new life, which is what Easter is all about. Let us sing our final hymn, 344, A Promise Rings Through the Ages. Okay, shake out your qualms, shake up your dreams, deepen your roots, extend your branches, trust deep water and head for the open, even if your vision shipwrecks you. Quit your addiction to sneer and complain, open a lookout, dance on the brink, run with your wildfire, you are close to glory. Leaping an abyss rather than upholstering a rut. Not dawdling, not doubting. Intrepid all the way. Walk toward clarity. At every crossroads, be prepared to bump into wonder. Only love prevails. En route to disaster, insist on canticles. Lift your ineffable out of the mundane. Nothing perishes. Nothing survives. Everything transforms. Honeymoon with big joy. Happy Easter. You can rise. Turn around and we'll sing Carry the Flame.